Hello, this is Carol.
Hey, Carol, and welcome back, everybody. Jim of Kuan Yin Healing. We're back for week 4 of the Reconnective Journey, and which I'm trying to conduct while one of my cats insists on walking back and forth across my lap without cessation. Oh, well, this too shall pass. Okay. Well, before we get started, how are things going? Just check in with folks. We've covered a lot of ground. I'm getting started in the physical and the emotional. We're going to be looking at the thought plane today and tying together a lot of stuff that we've been talking about. But how are folks doing with finding your patterns and looking at our tragic flaw, finding our allies, catching ourselves, doing this, that, or the other thing, or just general thoughts, reflections about where we are at this point?
Well, it's Colleen here. I would like to go first. I just wanted to share that I've gotten more and more stuck in my life, and I've had difficulty really engaging and then, you know, in the course, and then having my computer, having to replace it and stuff, has limited my ability to interact on the Facebook. And the good news is, like, I have been sort of seeking out various forms of healing in the last several months because I felt like this is enough. I really want to move forward. I really want to do some healing. So actually on Sunday, I sought out a girlfriend who has just started working on some shamanic breathwork healing, and did a healing with her, and I feel that I don't know how to say it, got rid of a lot of negativity. Is it demons, is it whatever, and I'm able to speak more clearly and, you know, sort of say my piece and feel fantastic. Haven't had a negative thought since this happened Sunday, which is a cause for joy for me. And so I sort of feel like I feel like I'm just now joining the group fully, and I look forward to being more a part of the group because the content has really intrigued me, but I have been kind of tied up in knots. Oh, man, that's my piece.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Here I am. New kid on the block.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Sharers?
This is Heather. I'll jump in.
Please.
Yes. So I am finding my voice. I don't remember when I had spoke last, but so all along things have been moving, getting the homework done, whether I'm actually sitting down doing it energetically every week has been definitely working on me, working through me, and moving me forward. So this week I'm finding a lot of fire really moving through, and it's like, you know, it's not working, and at the same time I'm having a bit of a challenge at finding that compassionate space for the fact that this is what works, and this is where I attract from, and this is what alignment means, and this is what serves me, and I know this. And at the same time, you know, there's like this, I have to put up the shingle out of office because people want to just want more. So I've been really clear about there's no more to give, and, you know, I'm it. I'm running the show here, taking care of me, myself, my son, my life. And, you know, everybody kind of wants to tell me how they think it should be and what I should be doing differently and how come I can't slow down for them and all this kind of stuff. And so that's where I'm challenged at right now, is how to stay compassionate with people when they want my time and my energy, and there's only so much of it. And trust me, I've tried everything under the sun, from here's my calendar, here's available space, I'd love to give it to you during this time, well, that doesn't work. I don't work on a calendar like you do. Why does everything have to be business oriented? It's like, I don't know. I'm just clear about my life and what I know supports me, and I don't know what to do. I'm sorry if I can't be compassionate toward the fact that you're in chaos 24/7 and you need to call me when you just can call me and I don't have my phone on when I'm surfing. I'm sorry. You know, I don't live by text messaging. You shouldn't either. You know, so there's a lot of that going on and the anxiety and chaos in the world. And the work that I do is to help support people not to live in that chaos. And I am not going to get caught up in it, but to be able to be in relationship and communication with people, you know, I've got to find a way to make that all work. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, a lot of this is going to come up in a couple more weeks. And the course, I mean, it's coming up for you obviously now. And
okay, that's good. Well, like I said, energetically it works on me, you know, as the assignments are being given. So here it is. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And life doesn't always follow my schedule. I've noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, I didn't schedule this today. It clearly does not say crisis today. I'd have remembered that. So.
Mm. So, well, the good news is, anyway, I'm being expressive about it, and this is the reason why, and it's not just shutting the door. It's this is why, because if I don't do it this way, this is the way I've tried. I'm trying to communicate in the little bits of seconds that I have available to, like, report in. I'm trying my hardest to communicate with people, mm-hmm. and so be it, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just quickly, because it's not today's topic, but... one of the things that helped me with that, Heather, was when I sat down and started doing tracking. So it does speak to what we're talking in terms of awareness, what's in our heads versus what's actually happening. And when I started tracking, who was I working with? What kind of results were they getting? What kind of work were we doing together? And I know I found out, you know, it's like a cliche out of a time management book, but I found out that... you know, a small percentage of my clients were the ones getting all the benefits and giving all the business. And a lot of the people who were the sucking up a lot of my time and were not getting all that good results are all the ones who were, you know, I want this, I want this, I want it now, and I don't want to pay for it either. And it wasn't doing either one of us any good. And when I really... saw that in black and white, it wasn't a matter of compassion anymore. It was a matter of reality. And I said, this is not a good use of my time or theirs. And I could then take my time and put it to the things that were a better use for both me and my clients.
So that's helpful when it comes to a working client relationship, but I'm talking about my life. As a single mom,
yeah.
I run by a schedule. So I'm talking about
yeah.
personal relationships. That
right.
with people who help me out and I help them out, like family members and lovers and friends, like I have to live on a schedule. It's just a matter
right.
of fact.
Right.
So that's pissing people off that because they don't live that way, you know.
Right.
I shouldn't always be so regimented, and I would like to know how not to be and still get things done. Yeah, so anyway, that I appreciate the feedback. I feel pretty clear and confident about work environment that way. More personal relationships and the dynamics of, you know, how to be available, you know, that's all. Or
yeah,
not.
Well,
and, you know, move beyond those things or whatever.
There again, there's quality time and there's not quality time. I mean, I'm not going to try to compete with the reality of being a single mother, but... you know, nonetheless, there are people clamoring for our time where the answer is no. And there are
the
people
answer is no,
just,
yeah.
And there are people who just want things instantly when, you know, like, why do you have to be so regimented? Like, well, I am. So, you know, get
yeah.
used to it.
Just who I am. You know, you
yeah.
want to get to know me? This is who I am. And so it got pretty heated tonight, and I got really angry. Like, I almost wanted to be, like, forceful about it because it was really pissing me off. You know, like, I just felt, like, a lot of this fire moving through me about this. Like, no, I'm not going to do that. And you can feel bad, and that's not my problem, and I'll have compassion for you there. But, you know, this is me holding my ground. So anyway, that's that. Somebody else can talk. I don't mean to monopolize the conversation here, but hopefully that helps some other people.
Yeah, and there's also the reality of, you know, we can't always be efficient with people the way that we can with things, but it comes down to which are the things that are important and which are the things that are not important, you know, and we know when those things are, you know, and, you know, like you have said, I years ago was talking to a therapist about this, you know, I'm just so busy, how would I even have time for a relationship? And, you know, she said, well, from what I know about you, if you were with the right person, you would find the time. And then we do that. When the things are important, we find the time for, you know, for family and things. And given the reality that there's so much time to go around. And you know, and that if we don't take time for ourselves, we don't have time for anything else.
That's it.
I actually, you know, I again, I can't compete with the single mom thing. But I have found that in business, you know, that if I don't take the space out for myself, that I end up not doing anybody any good.
So. Yeah. Well, that's what I basically left off with in the conversation, that, you know, I'm not going to be there for you if I'm not here for myself. So, you know, that was that. Okay.
You know, sorry, it's tough.
No, it's fine. This is great. I love this stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to figure it out, right? I'm not going to stay stuck in this. I got to figure out a way to dance. Yep.
All right. Anyone else? Okay, last chance. Because you know what happens once I start talking.
It's Colleen again. I just wanted to add, one other thing from my little spiel there, is that I realized that all of the work I've done in my adult life, and certainly the last few months, including this, helped to open me up to doing the work on Sunday. So I guess I didn't want to discount the impact of, even though I haven't actively been as involved in the recovery journey as I would like to be, I know that it has, you know, still had an impact on me. Anyhow, and I plan to be more involved. There you go.
All right, then. Okay, well, let's jump into the thought plane. And let me find the mute thing here. Okay. Well, when we looked at the levels of being, and the thought plane is right in the middle, and so we spend most of our time in awareness. And rightly so, Buddha pointed out that everything flows from mind. The only trouble is that the ego is also comfortable there as well. You know, the ego is, hey, everything flows from me. Everything happens to me. And we want to look at this carefully, because we want to keep what's good, as well as start finding some space away from what isn't working as well. One of the things that is interesting about humans is that when we sit down and look at this material, we latch onto the demon part. Oh, here are my demons, and here are my trials, and here are my tribulations, and here are the things that I have to wrestle with. And equally as important is the bliss and the mercy and the joy, and we kind of shove that aside. And I'm working on my demons. I don't have time to like follow my bliss right now. And it's very much as an important part of that. And I want to start by emphasizing that distinction. Joseph Campbell summarized his work as follow your bliss. Because battling demons is not a reason to get up in the morning. It's not a reason to work through things. Battling our demons just puts obstacle after obstacle after obstacle in front of us. And at a certain point, we go, enough, I'm tired of fighting, forget it. You know, the demons win. I'm just sitting here on my stump. But when we follow our bliss, that's something that pulls us. And when we're following our bliss, you know, obstacles are just hurdles. You know, they're meant to be jumped over. It doesn't matter what's in our way. We are going to that bliss, you know. It's just going to happen. We're going to find a way. So I want to start by pointing that out. And again, the reason that we cling to the demons is egos. Everything is happening to me. Okay, this is total ego. Once we start focusing and everything happens to me, it's a short jump from there to everything is the fault of others, things that come outside ourselves. And then once again, we're looking outside instead of inside. Nor is the purpose to blame ourselves. I like to think of shame as an acronym. Should have already mastered everything. But that's not a reasonable expectation. It's a part of a journey. It's a process. The point is, however, to look at how our thought manifests in our physical and emotional environment. Thought is the creative force. Okay? Thought is the law of attraction. Thought is the power to transform and transcend. The physical and the emotional things can get in our way, but the mind can destroy. I mentioned that sometimes people are careful about the astral plane. You'll see people who consider the astral plane dangerous. It's really the mental plane what we should be afraid of. That's where the real damage can happen, and that's where the real creation happens. The problem with the thought plane is this. If you believe something is true, it is. If you believe something is not true, it isn't. And either way, you are right. Yes, that's circular reasoning. But if we say that's a bunch of crap, that's also circular reasoning. So we have to step back and say, which is an empowering thought here? Which is a thought that, if I believe it, moves me forward? Because once we do, that becomes a reality. And the way to check on this is what we've already learned, is that emotions reflect the quality of our thoughts. Good quality thoughts feel good. Poor quality thoughts don't feel good. And so we can check in to the quality of what we're thinking and hence creating at any given moment. And we can make decisions to think better thoughts that are reflected in better emotions. We can look around at our physical world. Every so often, I like to step back and go, you know, how is this working out for me? Now, whatever's in my head, my physical world will tell me if that's accurate or if the evidence in front of me is saying things aren't the way that you would like to think. So, a couple of different major areas I want to cover today. The first is that we are not our thoughts. We talked a little bit about we're not our emotions. We're not our thoughts. Our thoughts are important, but they are not us. They are not our identity. They are not our being. I came to this understanding one morning by accident. In a conscious understanding anyway. I was handling a very negative experience. I was trying to help an acquaintance address some difficulties he was having. We had agreed to work together on these. But it was clear pretty quickly that he wasn't really looking to resolve anything, but rather he wanted an endless reflection, an endless sounding board, never actually getting down to any work, just sort of repeating this. So after a few weeks of this, I brought this up and explained that this really wasn't working and invited him to raise the issue again at a time when he was ready to address the problems. he immediately launched into this vicious verbal attack that lasted much of the next week, which frankly just confirmed my decision to step away from this. You know, it's filled with all kinds of distortions and outright falsehoods and you know, but what angry people do when they're trying to justify themselves. I understood all that, but it wasn't a pleasant experience for me, and I weighed pretty heavily for a few days. But I woke up one morning, on the one hand, feeling rested, clear, and relaxed from a good night's sleep, while also kind of recognizing with a sigh this dark cloud of swirling thoughts connected with the issue. I'm not really sure why, but just really abruptly, I saw and understood that there was a dichotomy between these two things. And the minute I realized that, I had a second revelation, just as instantaneous, that I didn't have to enter that swirling dark cloud, that these were actually two separate things. And I decided to just lay back and enjoy another 5-10 minutes of morning peace while the dark cloud of thoughts just kind of swirled around by itself off a few feet, having little or nothing to do with me at the moment. And later I rose and picked up my thoughts and started my day. I mean, quite literally, our being and our thoughts are not the same. Once I saw this, I could start to see it in other people. I watched my friend Louise, for example, when she was going through a troubling transition. I could see her usual positive glowing energy, and I could also see the swirling cloud coming and going, sometimes connecting, sometimes passing through. You know, we normally remain convinced that we are our thoughts, but this simply isn't so. We don't even need thoughts. You know, there are different ways of experiencing the world. As a professional musician, you know, there's a whole language that doesn't involve what we usually think of as thought. I had one really interesting experience one night a few years ago. I woke up in the middle of the night, and just all of a sudden, in that half awake, half asleep thing, and I kind of heard this voice say, "Now try this in your home environment." And I had the sense that I had been in a class, and now I was doing this exercise, and I knew that I was supposed to maintain this euphoric feeling that I had from the classroom, now in my own home, and kind of did that for 5 minutes before I drifted off back to sleep, and I don't know, presumably back to class. But, I mean, it felt really wonderful. But it pointed out again to me that we are not our thoughts. The thoughts are important tools, but they aren't our identity. And we need to remember how to live and how to just be independent of the interruption and the distortion of thinking. Okay? I used to get into times when my thoughts were just racing. I wondered, what do I do about, you know, those various situations? And finally, it occurred to me, well, you know, stop doing it, it isn't working. You don't know what to think? Just stop thinking. Take your brain, go set it on the counter, let the thing spin by itself for a while, go off and do something else. We are not our thoughts. Our thoughts are instead how we create things. And this isn't some great mystical law of attraction puzzle. It goes all the way back to Plato. Before there can be a chair, Plato pointed out, we need, somebody has to have the idea of chair, okay? If you want a blue chair, somebody has to have the idea of blue. We put blue and chair together. Everything exists in thought before it exists in physical forms, okay? You know, my house that's being built finally, you know, it totally exists in the abstract, every single detail of it before it's even built, you know? And not only me, but from the architect to the general contractor and the heating plumbing guy, the electrician, the bank, the excavator, everybody has this idea of this house, and we all have the same idea before it even exists, before it starts out in physical manifestation. Okay? So very important, we are not our thoughts. Because, though, we believe that we are our thoughts, we pretty much think incessantly. Because we think our thoughts are us, we go traveling after this. But this is actually backwards, okay? And the ego will fight it. Instead of going from thoughts to us, really it should be from us to thoughts. So again, our thoughts are the creative process. Negative thoughts are mere worries. In fact, look what happens in a negative thought, right? When we worry, we have an accompanying negative emotion. If we hold to it, we start having negative physical manifestations, ulcers and other health, high blood pressure, other health symptoms. It's a misuse of the imagination. It's creation in the wrong way. So, stop thinking, at least without purpose. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have thoughts, just we don't stop identifying with them. As soon as we do this, our emotions start calming. And after a while, the thoughts get tired of swirling and stop. It takes a while, okay? And then once our emotions calm and we can stop being pushed around by our thoughts and our egos, we can then purposefully create with mind out of the way, with all those distortions and swirling and clouds. We can start to see the real possibilities in front of us. Okay? We really start to see things really, very clearly. So learn to wait. Learn to allow. For me, I learned this mountain hiking. You know, it takes me a good 6-8 hours to get into that very clear space. And things just become very clear. Watch a cat, right, waiting for a mouse. The cat will sit there calmly for 6 or 8 hours, you know, totally at ease, waiting for this mouse. Feel our emotions, but don't let them control us. Eckhart Tolle writes of a lecture that Krishnamurti was giving once, and all of a sudden in the middle of the lecture, he stops and says, "Would you like to know my secret?" And everybody, just a silence, and Krishnamurti says, "I don't care what happens." And divorced from that, he can see the possibilities and then can create with purpose. It doesn't mean that we don't care. It means that once we get all the stuff out of the way that's mucking it up, we can start to create with purpose. So let's talk about purpose for a second. The purpose is the why that we do something, okay? When we know why we're doing something, the what and the how fall naturally into place. Look how much time we spend, you know, going, "Oh, geez, what should I do?" You know, like, well, how should I do this? And it's easy, ironically, to lose sight of why are we doing something. I used to totally react to things constantly until after I heard enough time from one of my friends, I started to listen to what he kept telling me. I would always be like, "What should I do? What should I do?" He says, "Why do you have to do anything?" You know, what he was saying is, don't act until you have a purpose. And when we do have a why, again, the what and the how will fall into place. This workshop is a good example, right? I've been putting this together for a lot this past year, but really for the past few years, and finding a way it all tied together. You know, there was no way to see all this at once at the beginning. It just happened bit by bit because there was this, I knew why I wanted to do it. There's got to be a better way to go through this process, and there's got to be a better way to raise our vibrations. And as I did this, how to do this and what form it should take, came into this together. And instead of it being an impossible task, as it would have been if I didn't have a good why, it all fell together. Now imagine instead other workshops I could certainly do. I have the talent, the skills, the expertise, but I'm really just not into them. You know, what would happen? Well, that's just not a purposeful creative use of my thought and attention. How would that inspire me to meet the challenges that would come up? You know, the obstacles would discourage the project before it even started. And in fact, that's what happens to most of the projects people think of, isn't it? So the difference is the why. How and what flow from why. When you want something, ask yourself, why do you want that? Okay? Why do you want that? If the answer has you smiling and excited and happy and full of joyous anticipation, then you're onto something. Do it. But if the answer is drab, routine, predictable, matter of fact, then you're creating something you don't really want. Your own thoughts are working against you. Okay? Again, emotions are signals. Use them to gauge the quality of your thoughts and whether you should charge in or change course. Now, how many times do people say, give me a sign? There are the signs right there all the time. Even if things work out differently than you'd planned, you'll still find yourself on an interesting, enticing path, simply further along than you thought you were before and having fun. In Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, he says, there's a reason we say arts and sciences, never science and art. Okay? The art always comes before the science. Similarly, we don't set out to win hearts and minds, but rather, not minds and hearts, but rather hearts and minds in that order. Creation comes literally from the heart. In one segment of the documentary, The Living Matrix, I'll post a link to it on our page, researchers show a series of images, computer-generated images. Some of them are negative, some of them are positive. And they measure the heart and brain activity on people for each one. And not surprisingly, their heart and the brain waves are different for the positive, positive images than for the negative images. But then when these images came up randomly generated by the computer, yes, the waves change positive or negative, but they found out something really interesting. The heart wave would change first, and then the brain wave would change, and then the image would change. Literally, the heart responded first before the image even changed, before the computer even generated the image. And then the brain wave followed the heart wave, and then the image changed. At essence, we are heart-centered, not thought-centered. In a related discovery, Dr. Gary Swartz discovered measuring the heart and brain waves of practitioners and clients in reconnective healing sessions. And he found that during a session, the practitioner's heart wave changes. And then when the practitioner's heart wave changes, the client's brain waves change and feel more calm and peaceful. Okay, interesting. Again, we're following the heart. If you ever looked at wonderful short books, Zen and the Art of Archery, the master archer keeps saying not to shoot, but to let it shoot. It being this vague divine essence. But whatever it is, it comes from the heart. And when our thoughts follow our heart, we are in purposeful alignment, and positive emotions resonate with it. When we find we're not feeling happy, we need to change our thoughts. The emotions are a sign we're not creating purposefully. kind of jumping around here a little bit. So, to get to the good, to get to our wants, to get to the things we love, these are the things that we talked about early on, right? What is it you want? What is it you love? Why do you want those things? We have to let go of fear, okay? Fear is an obstruction. Fear is an illusion. You know, there are many different versions of treating fear as an acronym. False expectations appearing real, okay? Forget everything and run. Instead, facing everything and recover, or face everything and realize. Looking at those fears and understanding that fear is the opposite of love. If we're too tied up in our demons, if we're too tied up in our fears, we're overlooking where's our bliss, where is love, okay? I'm acting out of fear. Why am I doing that? Why am I not acting out of love? It is more powerful. Okay? All we can do when we're acting out of fear is continue to jump around obstacles, however well we do it. It's only when we operate out of love that we are pulled, okay, and that we have momentum. Consequently, we talked in the past about definitions of abundance. I love what Mary Hall says about considering abundance as an energy signature. It's not a matter of simply a matter of plenty. It's a vibration. It's not just, and not just money. It's not, for example, what usually people think of as abundance as a lot of money. Abundance can be realized when there's an abundance of options. Okay, I'm not stuck. There are many, many, many possibilities. But abundance is really then about, it's the nature of reality, okay? Just as joy is our natural state, abundance is the nature of reality. It's only fear that shuts that off. So if abundance is the nature of reality, why then does reality seem so tough? Well, a bunch of reasons here. I have written down, four. So, in order, then. First answer to that, why does reality seem so tough? What do we do about this? Napoleon Hill writes, in his epic book, Think and Grow Rich, a book I recommend. I didn't look at this book for years because I took it as yet another one of those, you know, how to be a billionaire, you know, in two easy steps kind of books. But it's not that at all. It's really a book about vibration, about getting unstuck, about the nature, the really tough nature of reality, the way that we're talking about it here. So how do we deal with that apparently tough nature of reality? Napoleon Hill, I've got down here in five steps. And the first is, have a definite major purpose. Again, follow your bliss. You need a passion, a driving force, a commitment. It will keep you focused. Now, if this sounds impractical, let me give you an example. One of my dearest friends was ordained as a Unitarian minister Sunday. And now, I know him as a musician and as a teacher. You know, he's was an English major. He's a banjoist. In fact, there is a lot of ribbing about both, good-natured ribbing at his ordination. And there is a slip of the tongue where his last name is Cleveland, and they called him Joseph Campbell once. And so we were teasing about that. You know, follow your banjo. Instead of follow your bliss. But, you know, here's the thing. You know, why does he play the banjo? He just loves it. So what is it? What did following that purpose do for him? Well, following his love of the banjo got him to start the Focus Project in Syracuse, a nonprofit organization that brings in all kinds of musicians from all over the world out of service. Following the banjo is what got one day the May Memorial Unitarian representative called him to see if he might be interested in putting together an alternative music program. And her name was Kristen. And Kristen and Joe dated, fell in love, got married. I was at their wedding. And Joe's, while looking for his own, what did he want to do, and when he was feeling stuck, decided that he wanted to go to seminary and become a Unitarian minister, something that came to fruition, you know, just 2 days ago, all from following the banjo. It's interesting, wonderful things happen when we follow our bliss instead of our fears. So first, what is your definite major purpose? And then have a reasonable plan for achieving it. Okay? There's nothing mystical about that. What do you want to do? What's a good plan? And it's okay to follow, to change the plan as you go along. You know, to the extent it doesn't work, adjust it. Second step, why do you want this? If you know why, the how and the what will follow. there's a world of difference between machining a metal part and machining the brake for a kid's bike, right? You know, one is just numbers. One keeps the kid safe. There's a huge difference in the work that flows from that understanding, okay? It's very important. Step three is, what are you willing to give for this goal? Okay? This keeps us in balance with the world around us. What are you willing to, you know, if you get this thing that you want, what are you willing to do for it? How are you willing to serve in exchange for this? And it's not a matter of punishment. It's not a matter of the bill is due. I love what Mark Silver of The Heart of Business says about, he has a course called Sacred Selling, and in it he talks about, transactions are an opportunity to create equals. You know, one person is bringing the services, and the transaction allows the other person to be an equal. And so, you know, how are we going to be equals here? What are you willing to give for this goal? How are you going to serve in a way that brings you joy, okay, in exchange for this definite major purpose, in exchange for this major why? And again, I like to think of abundance as a stream. It can't be dammed at either end or there's no flow. There's got to be water constantly flowing in. There's got to be water constantly flowing out. Okay, this is truly what abundance is. Fourth step, love yourself. What would you do for any other friend? Would you do that for yourself too? When I first heard this, I really felt like I'd been slapped, because I realized that the answer was no. I wasn't doing for myself what I would do for any friend. And I said, well, that's not balance. That's not right. What would the divine do for you, however you conceive that? Would you do any less for yourself than the divine would do, right? And, you know, and if you wouldn't, you know, why do you get to undercut the divine? Does that seem appropriate? Love others. But as we've been talking about, you know, the world is a mirror. Understand, they are a reflection of you. See how beautiful they truly are. And recognize that this is your beauty shining back to you. You know, my wonderful friends like Louise and Joe and others, when I see them, I recognize that I'm doing things right, because these are the things that I've attracted in my life. And love life. It's what we're doing here, and for good reason. Enjoy it and live it with passion. And we'll talk more about that later today. And then five, finally, detach from others' thoughts. Like it or not, we continually look for others' approval. We're a social species. That also means that we accept a lot of thoughts that mean nothing more than that a lot of people think them. And that holds us back. Don't let naysayers stop you before you start. Again, Mary Hall has some wonderful questions about negative thoughts. Just, to whom does this thought belong? A lot of times the negative thoughts in our heads aren't even our thoughts. Let them travel right on through. Okay? That's not my thought. Just let it go. Let it go. And don't listen to these limiting beliefs. Common negative outlook is used as a defense mechanism. Instead, ask in true appreciation, how does it get any better than this? And then from that place of appreciation, ask with wonder, what else is possible? And listen to the answers. And be ready to be surprised. Be ready to be surprised. Would you be willing to let go and destroy all the habits and thoughts that prevent you? Yeah? Yes? No? Okay? And if you realize it's not that, oh, I can't, you realize, oh, my God, I'm not willing? Wait a minute, that's messed up. And then you can work on becoming willing. Fear is an illusion. Only love is real. This is not a platitude. It's reality. Learn to embrace it. Your experience will change rapidly. Do what you love. People talk about this as some, like, high ideal. Do what you love. It's easier. it is easier. Okay, so five steps there from the Pauline Hill with a little embellishment. The second way of looking at, you know, if abundance is the nature of reality, why does it seem so tough? Is that we have a lot of myths about thought. One of the things to do is use what we've learned so far about the physical world and emotions to keep our thoughts in check. You know, we tend to thought of, well, you know what I think is, and suddenly what we think is reality. Like, when did that happen? When did we become the arbiters of reality? Okay. A really useful thing is to get into the habit of looking at the physical world and asking, is there a discrepancy between what's in my head and what I'm looking at? And the answer is very frequently yes. One of the major benefits of looking at, you know, where am I pointing fingers at others? Where are my demons? Is that it tells us what's inside. It tells us what we're thinking, despite what we may believe about ourselves. We look at the physical world and take it as the hard evidence that we don't want to look at. We can make really major progress really quickly. Instead of asking, I can't believe, you know, this would happen or that would happen. Ask yourselves, why is this in my life? What did I do to help put it there? Okay? What do I need to change to take that out? Because like the frost poem that we started with in week one, we tend to justify our world rather than look at it. So we need to look at these myths of thought. One of the major myths of thought we need to look at is addictions. And addictions here in the sense of the word, although many of us have more standard addictions, I think at this point everybody has heard at one point, certainly part of my story is overcoming alcoholism. And addictions are thought problems. Addictions are believing other than what's real. Okay? I, for 10 years, got up every morning and laying in bed and said, I'm not going to drink today. And got up and opened a drink. Said, okay, well, tomorrow. I mean, every single day for 10 years. It's like, you know, that's insane. And it's just flat out insane. And yet, if you had told me that, I would have said, no, you don't understand. I'm cutting down. I'm taking care of this. Mind your own business, right? No, what's in my head and what's reality? Total mismatch. Okay? This is what happens in any kind of addiction. Addictions to cigarettes, addictions to junk food, drug addiction, TV addiction, internet addiction. Now, I don't, you know, people have a cottage industry about afflictions these days. I don't mean to go down that road, but I do mean to say, you know, oh, geez, you know, I just don't have any time, or this didn't happen because I had to do this. And start to ask yourselves, did you have to? And start paying attention. You know, so for example, every so often, I'll just have a 3, 4, 5 day period where I'll find myself kind of just surfing the net, playing video games, neither of which I very commonly do. This is just not something I usually do. And if you asked me, I'd say, no, it's no big deal. I'm just doing this thing. And then I realized I'm wasting a ton of time, which is okay once in a while. But what I've learned to do is step back and ask, Tim, what's going on? What's going on with you? And to start to notice that, wait a minute, you know, this isn't a conscious path that I have. This is just something I'm doing. There's something going on. What is it? This is what I mean by addictions. Where are we doing things that aren't in our best interest, that aren't really conscious, purposeful choices? And yet we do them a lot. We all have things like that. Okay, any place where we're doing things that are not in our best interest, that are not purposeful to creative choices, and yet we find ourselves doing them over and over again. You know, those are addictions. Those are the thought myths I'm talking about here. As another friend likes to say, you know, people will say, oh, yeah, I find myself slipping back into old behaviors. And he likes to say, you know, if you're still doing them, they're not old behaviors. And that rings true. So what do we do about addictions? Well, as somebody who has come out of a major one and helps a lot of other people, here's my take on this. First thing, recognize them. Going back, compare what's really happening with what's in your head. Remember that what you think is just not reality. Okay? That's the justification. Check what's in your head against what you're looking at and recognize when things don't match. And don't make excuses for it. Start to recognize that one of these things is not like the other. Okay? Oh, no, I'm going to get to this. Yeah, like when? It's been years, right? Okay? There's a problem there. Recognize it, admit that. The very next thing that you do, get help. Now, this could take a number of forms. This could mean getting professional help if it's a serious thing. This could mean, you know, asking your friends to come over and give you a hand. You know, if there's nothing wrong with individualism, but we live in a culture that has taken this to unhealthy extremes. You know, in the we've all heard stories, you know, from, quote, the old days, unquote, where you had some big project, a barn raising, you invited everybody over, and you built it, and it was done, right? Get help, and it's just done. Stop trying to do everything by yourself. Talk to other people. Even little things. A friend of mine who she's a yoga instructor in Montreal, and for years has been talking about putting together a yoga nidra program, and she just never finds the time. So finally I said, okay, would you have like half an hour a day to spend on this? She goes, well, yeah. I said, great. So you can have 2 days off a week, but 5 days a week, spend 30 minutes on it, and another friend and I were talking to her, and email us what you did. And she was like, okay. And in the first week, she'd done more than she had in the past year, okay? Why? Because somebody else was involved. It can be that easy. It can be that easy. Next thing you do about addictions. Replace old habits with new ones. Don't tell yourself you're just going to stop doing it. You're not. You never have. Okay? It's just not going to happen that way. This is a thought myth, by the way. As much as I like willpower, willpower cannot get you out of an addiction because it's a mistake in thinking. Okay? You cannot think your way out of an addiction. You cannot use your willpower to get yourself out of an addiction. You need other people. You need help. And in particular, you need new habits. You can't just stop doing a habit. Replace old habits with new habits. Okay? Replace old habits with new habits. One of the things that I did since I got up every morning and opened a beer, yes, I know that sounds insane. It doesn't even sound enticing at this point. But anyway, once I recognized that was a problem, I got up every morning and make coffee instantly, first thing. I do that to this day, actually, years later. There were ruts in the road that led to stores to buy beer. There were ruts in the store that led to aisles to buy the beer. There was so many habits. So I shopped at all different stores. I drove a different way to work. I went to places where there weren't ruts. This is what you have to do with any addiction, even ones less serious. You know, if you find that, you know, geez, the first thing I do is I come in and turn on the TV. And why do I do this? And I get sucked into watching it for hours. And so, just for example, so decide, what are you going to do when you walk in the door instead of turning on the TV? If you always get up and, you know, light a cigarette to go with your coffee, decide ahead of time what's going with your coffee instead. Changing habits, okay, requires replacing the old habits with new habits so that you can change your behavior rather than simply try to use willpower, which isn't going to work. People, places, and things. Who are the people who promote this activity that you're trying to stop? Where are the places where you tend to do it? What are the things it goes with? Identify these things. Stop doing it. Change people. Change the places. Change the things. Okay. To get past this, well, you know, I don't know, it's just I had a rough day. I just need whatever it is. Okay? I love using something I came up with. I call it the rule of three. And that is if I'm just wrestling with something and I just feel bad, I just need this, you know, fill in the blank. I remind myself that experience bears out. I'm not going to feel like this in 3 hours. In fact, probably not even 2 hours. The situation is going to look different in 3 days than it does right now. The situation is going to be very different in 3 weeks than it is right now. And it's going to be practically unrecognizable 3 months from now. And if that sounds like just words, I challenge you to look back in your own life. 3 hours ago, 3 days ago, 3 weeks ago, 3 months ago. And you realize, oh my God, he's right. Everything was different. You know, the thing I was wrestling with, it's not even on my mind now. Everything's different. And so I remind myself in that space. It gives me just a little bit of oomph to get to the next thing. A daily spiritual program, an essential part of getting out of an addiction. You need something stronger than yourself. Willpower is not going to do it. And, very important, help others. You don't just get help, you help others. I have a friend who, when in his early days of sobriety, would call his sponsor and complain about what was going on in his life, and his sponsor would say, okay, I'll come pick you up. And he would come pick him up, and he would drive him to the rescue mission. And they would serve food all day. And, you know, hours later, he would ask his sponsor, so, like, well, what about me? And his sponsor would say, what about you? You know? Every time that happened, until he finally got the hint. The best way to get out of your own mind is to help other people. Okay? It gets you out of your mind into doing something that's both productive and stops you from camping out in your head. You know, my mind is a dangerous neighborhood. I shouldn't be there alone. If it's something you need a lot of, make a commitment. You know, volunteer an afternoon a week so that you have to go even if you don't feel like it. and finally, recognize that addiction comes from fear. Addiction fills a lack. Okay? It fills a void. And we feel a lack and a void because we're afraid of something. We feel that there's something that's not there. That's fear. So, whether it's a large things or small things, recognize what's going on. Okay? And use some of these tools to get reality back to where it is. So that's the second thing. Right. So abundance is the nature of reality. Why does it seem so tough? Third approach. Time takes time. You know, if we've walked 10 miles into the forest and now we're turning around, it's a 10-mile trip back out of the forest. You know, we have to be patient. I love Bert Goldman's take on this in terms of the law of attraction. This is how most people use the law of attraction. It would be like you went into this very wonderful restaurant where they make any kind of soup you want, and they do it totally from scratch. And so you walk in and you tell the waiter, you know, I think I'll have chicken noodle soup. And the waiter says, very good. And it goes back and tells the chef, who immediately gets to work on it. And after about 20 minutes, you call the waiter over and you say, "So what's going on with the soup?" And the waiter says, "Well, you know, it's in process." And you go, I can't believe this is taking so long. You know what? Forget it. I'll have tomato soup." So the waiter says, "Very good." Goes back into the kitchen where the chef is almost done with the chicken noodle soup. Says he doesn't want chicken noodle soup. He wants tomato soup. So the chef pours the chicken noodle soup out and gets right to work on making tomato soup from scratch. And another 20 minutes go by, and you call the waiter over again. "Why is the soup taking so long?" And, the chef is working on the soup. You know, it should be done soon. He goes, "Oh, never mind. I'll have the vegetable beef." And so, okay, very well. And so he goes back and he tells the chef, "Nope, he doesn't want the tomato soup." So the waiter takes the tomato soup off the stove, pours it out, and starts to work on the vegetable beef. And 20 more minutes, you go like, "You know what? This restaurant just sucks." And you walk out. Why isn't the law of attraction working? It is working. Chill your jets. You know, time takes time. Be patient. The classic story on this, again, comes from Napoleon Hill, who tells the story of R.U. Darby, who went with his uncle. This is during one of the gold rushes, and his uncle had discovered a rich vein of gold and kind of kept it quiet and staked his claim. And his nephew, sold everything, got together some equipment. His nephew was R.U. Darby and came out to join his uncle. And they worked the mine briefly before the gold ran out. And they dug 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 and they dug, and there was nothing. Finally, they sold everything at a discount and went back east. Now, the guy they sold it to had always been interested in mining. He had a passion for it. Remember Campo, Follow Your Bliss? And so he was excited to be able to buy a mine at a discount. And so when the opportunity came up, he consulted a geologist. Now, that's something Darby hadn't thought of doing. And the geologist pointed out that, you know, in this kind of a formation, it's very likely that the vein is running kind of this way rather than this way. And so the mine was sold, and when the new owner got working on the mine, indeed, the geologist was right, and the new owner, who previously, was just a junk man, discovered a very rich gold vein of gold only 3 feet away from where Darby had stopped digging. 3 feet away from where Darby had stopped digging. So a couple things here. Time takes time. Persevere, have a definite major purpose, have a plan, get help, consult experts, and follow your bliss. I mean, one of the major parts of the story is the junkman had a passion for mining. Darby and his uncle were just looking for cash. Darby learned his lesson. He went on and became an extraordinarily successful in insurance. But time takes time. Appreciate what it takes to bring something into physical manifestation. Okay, it's not enough to sit around and being all mystical. You know, one of the reasons my house will get built is that people who know how to take those abstract ideas and put them into physical form will be working on it. Now, I don't know how to do that. I'm not good at this in that regard. Okay, if you want writing, I'm your guy. If you want music, I'm your guy. If you want a program, I'm your guy. You want healing, I'm your guy. But, you want a house, I don't know how to do that. But there are people who do know how to do that and appreciate, the various professions and craftsmen and the genius that they bring towards taking these ideas and manifesting them in the physical world. We see miracles every day. We're just so used to them that we don't think of it that way. Okay? Every idea that comes from craftsmen into reality is a miracle. Okay? It's physical manifestation from abstract idea into physical reality. So, again, this is the importance of the rule of gratitude. versus feeling negative about our lives. Okay? When we're feeling negative, that's what we're creating. When we're feeling negative, those are the thoughts that we are clinging to. And that's what we're creating, a negative situation. Okay? The reason that it's so, quote, hard, unquote, to manifest things is that we are, our brains, our thoughts are so jumbled, and there's this tangle that we're throwing on the table rather than a clear purpose. What is it you want? Why do you want it? You know, what's the plan? By starting with gratitude, what do I already have? What has already been created? Who are the people who could already help me? How can you not feel grateful for that, right? There's help. Wow. I'm instantly, bing, talk about instant manifestation. The second I get help, I am instantly further than I was. If I'm grateful for that, now I'm feeling the positive emotions that go with the positive creative thoughts that move things into manifestation. And again, we tend to think of these things as metaphysical. It's as practical gets. That's why it's crucial that gratitude is not the end of the process, but the beginning of the process. That's why it's crucial when we talk about meeting the goddess in the road of trials, that yes, we have to face the demons, but the demons are simply aspects of ourselves. You're not facing any obstacles. You're just learning to read reality. It's crucial that we spend time on meeting the goddess. It's crucial that we notice those allies, that we appreciate the magical tools that we have to bring with us, that we appreciate the knowledge and the skills that others can bring and share with us. We appreciate the things that we already have, right? It's like how many times in a story does somebody in trouble and then somebody else reminds them, you know, like, what about that little magical thing that, you know, so-and-so gave us? Oh, yeah, and then we find it again. And boom, presto, change-o. So, the final part that I want to talk about today to tie all this together is the apotheosis part, the idea of what happens when meeting the goddess meets atonement with the Father. Right, we touched on this a little bit last time, but here I want to drive in another point. And the way that I understand this is with the metaphor of nature, nature in the wilderness. Last summer, I climbed Dix Mountain. And unlike, I climb a lot in the high peaks and in the Adirondacks and various other places, but I had never been to Dix Mountain because it's a very long hike. And it would be, you know, I figured a backpacking trip. Until I ran across Stewart at the top of Mount Marcy, who pointed out that, well, there's this other trail that went in. If you left early, it would be a very, very long day, but you could make a day of it, just as I had just Marcy. You know, as I get up at 2 or 3 and start at dawn and hike till dark and then drive home. So, okay, that's possible. Well, the only thing about that is, when I climbed Mount Marcy, Mount Marcy is the highest mountain in New York State, and it's in the middle of the High Peaks Wilderness, and there's a maze of trails there, and it's extremely popular. So when I climb Mount Marcy by myself in August, I'm not going to be alone. There's just no chance of being alone, okay? In fact, even when I was climbing Algonquin Peak, which is near there, in late October, and it's where I all but broke my knee, I had help. You know, it's just, they're just well-traveled. But Dix Mountain is in the middle of the Dix Mountain Wilderness. And I didn't realize until I got there, but there's no place to register for the trail because it's on the trail starts on private land. So there's no help from rangers. They wouldn't even know I'm there. It's privately owned land, but nobody there is patrolling and knows I'm there. So there are no intersecting trails. It is just walking straight deep into the Dix Mountain wilderness. It is as wilderness gets. I'm not going to see anybody. Nobody knows I'm there. And it's an extremely difficult climb. In fact, some of it was straight up rock. It's the only climb I've ever done where my husky almost refused to go on at a couple of points. And I also recognized that, one, it was a beautiful day, but I also recognized the danger involved in this. I'm stepping over huge crevasses. You know, I'm climbing up faces. I recognized very clearly, Tim, no mistakes today, because if you make a mistake, you die here. And it's very clear to me, not just, you know, the peace of nature, but the absolute wilderness. You know, I'm thinking as I walk into this, this would be a place to go to die. It was one of those 90-degree days, and I wore my jacket, like, well into 2 after in the afternoon, because I'm walking at this pass, and it's cold and damp down there, even though it had been a dry summer. And I'm surrounded by nature that's rough and tough. And it's not even that nature was against me in any way. It's not that. Nature just didn't care. Yeah, live, die, you know, whatever. I mean, just doesn't care. You know, there are mosquitoes, there are gnats, there's bears, there's you, there's this rock, there's this leaf. Who cares? It's just this vast indifference. And yet at the same time, oh my God, what a beautiful, beautiful, I've never seen anything like it. The whole trip, not to mention from the summit, there is just mountains and mountains and mountains and wilderness and wilderness and wilderness in every direction. And it's just awe-inspiring, absolutely awe-inspiring. Now, when I think of the goddess meets atonement, this is what I'm talking about, that there's this beauty and grace and wonder of nature. And there's the strictness of the Father, right, that makes sure that we learn our trials before we go on. And the real understanding of this process is that when we look at nature, we don't say, well, sometimes nature is nice and sometimes nature is evil. No, we understand that this is part of the majesty of being, of the majesty of nature. And the understanding of the road of trials, finally, you know, and the apotheosis is the understanding, finally, that the tragedy and the mercy, the good parts, they are all part of the majesty of being. They are all part of the wonder of being alive. And that we come to a part where we appreciate all of it. All of it. Okay? In the same way that we don't judge nature as good and bad, we appreciate nature in totality. That's what Campbell gets at here finally. The blessings and the justice, they equal one another. Left alone, we would destroy ourselves and our world. Okay? We would see them as others. We would do things that are not in our best interest or anyone else's. We need those negative parts in the same way that, you know, if a small child is playing with knives, okay, you take the knives away. You don't negotiate with the child. You don't care that they're crying. You just, it's a non-negotiable point. You know, you're too young. I'll take those knives. You know, it's not something that's coming out of fear. It's something that's coming out of love, someone's safety. And to understand that the road of trials is like that. We talked about comedy and tragedy, right? Comedy was when general human faults, all of us are dealing with something. And we don't deal with it well, and there are outside forces that help us in the end. Tragedy, we one hero alone is facing that hero's tragic fall. Okay? And this is really the, we're going to have challenges and opportunities and pathways. We're going to have repeated challenges as long as we cling to those aspects that are our faults, because we need to transcend those faults. They are holding us back. And that those others that we face, those poor experiences, is us, highlighting our tragic fault as long as we cling to it. This is the role of choice. How fast we grow is up to us. How long do we keep clinging to stuff? How long do we keep bashing our head against the wall? Now, that said, give ourselves some credit. Ego has a very useful role. We can't master all this in an afternoon. Time takes time. And our ego shuts us off from just being overrun by all of this. But as we keep going on this journey, as we keep pursuing this journey, as we keep on our quest, what we ultimately get, what Campbell calls the ultimate boon, is a gift from the universe, from the divine, step down to whatever our current level is. Like the old saying that their prayers are all answered, only have three answers. And it's never no. It's either not yet, or yes, or I have something better. And the not yet means time takes time. They have something better means I have to get outside of myself. Okay? Left alone, can only see the world as it is in my head. And the world is much bigger than that. So our quest is taken to this ultimate boon, this ultimate discovery. Okay, in a tragedy, the tragic hero eventually comes to this realization that's worthwhile, that brings back. Well, we don't have to have utter ruin, but at some point, that's the whole point, is that we get past this and we can reach our quest and we can bring something back. What we were looking for, not so much, but something more, something beyond our information, beyond our imagination, something that's beyond ourselves, something that's even better, something that's a benefit not just to us but to the entire community. The things I'm sharing in the Reconnector Journey is a result of many of my own travels. It's a chance to be of service, a chance to connect. It's the blissful manifestation of presence, of divine presence, surpassing anything that can be said by the justification that Frost was talking about in The Road Not Taken. So we continue on this path. It's a purging of faults, so that we are able and ready to take that chariot, that sun chariot across the sky, in its proper time. And when we do that, there are gifts beyond what we can imagine. This repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, time after time after time after time. We reach a quest, we get an ultimate boon, we come back, then we grow into the next step, repeating the journey, until one day we've realized the void, we've reached awareness. Ultimately, we started off annihilating self. Ultimately, both son and father are annihilated because they're no longer needed. Ultimately, the son becomes the father and is filled with compassion. Instead of being the one, facing the test, you're the one administering the test, not because you want to beat other people up, because out of compassion, you're like, no, don't play with the knife, sweetie. not forever, not now. Later, when you're ready to play with knives. So what I'm getting at in my, long-winded way at the moment, is coming to this understanding that these, quote, negative, unquote, parts are part of being, are part of the blessings, are part of the gifts, that we're not allowed to play with knives when we're not ready, that we're allowed to play with knives as soon as we are ready. when we are ready, we can do things with knives we ever imagined what we were trying to do with them in the first place before we were ready. So that's the overall cosmic place that we've been headed with this. Now, the thing is to move from here to the next planes means not only understanding how the physical, emotional, and thought works together, but understanding that our thoughts are not reality. Yes, we use our thoughts to create reality, but it's a typical trap, and we spend a lot of time in the trap. So this is the wonders of meditation. The wonders of meditation. Your daily spiritual practice at this point might include meditation.
Hello, is anybody there? Tim, where are you?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what happened there.
Well, I think Tim got disconnected.
Yeah, I think so, too. I tried calling him.
You did?
Yeah, and I tried. I've sent him a text, email, too.
I sent an email.
Mm-hmm. So I haven't heard. I guess there's only four of us now on. How did we get unmuted?
I'm not sure.
Is that weird?
I
heard someone say,
unmuted if...
hello, is anyone there? And I answered, but then there was no one talking back to me.
Uh-huh. He's probably talking on and on and on. Sorry.
Well, if he's unmuted, then he must hear us talking about him.
No, I think he's disconnected. Because if he gets disconnected, then that's why the we're not muted, you know? Kind of just faded away because he wasn't there holding it.
Well, I hung up and dialed back in, and it said muted.
Right. And I just did that, too, and then it said muted, and it said unmuted. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where to go from here.
I don't know. Let me see if I get anything back from him on Gmail. I mean, on email. Didn't get anything yet. His phone's probably off and his computer's probably down, or at least the one that he would get an email at.
That could be. I have no idea what the weather's like where he is.
Where is he?
He's
somewhere
in New York. It's just kind of cloudy over this. I don't know what it's doing where he is. I'm about 2 hours.